G'day folks, and welcome to the Vookcast, Australia's Nintendo podcast. My name's Oliver Brandt, and with me this week are Angelo Valdivia.
Hey, Paisanos.
Michael Goncalves.
Hey, team.
And Luke Henderson.
Howdy, howdy.
We've got a great episode lined up for you this week, all about two more incredible Zelda games added to the Switch, a new Bluey game, Rayman DLC, and more. But first, let's talk about the Wii U, because not a lot of Wii U news going on these days. So, about 5 months ago, on March 3rd, Mario Kart 8 and Splatoon were sort of taken offline by Nintendo because of a security vulnerability. Not an invulnerability, that would be incredible. There was a security vulnerability. And basically, like, a lot of Nintendo's games from, like, sort of like 3DS, Wii U, and Switch all were affected by this. Most of them got patches. Or pretty much all of them got patches. They were, like, patching, like, 10 games a day for, like, 4 weeks. Mario Kart 8 and Splatoon just never got a patch. Nintendo said that they were coming back eventually, and now they're finally back. So, the caveat is that Nintendo says that if there's any any difficulty with online again, if anything makes it even remotely difficult to provide online play, they're just going to pull it offline forever. As we know, like, the Wii U eShop and the 3DS eShop shut down earlier this year, so, you know, this isn't, like, turning off prospective buyers anytime soon. What do we sort of think about this?
I mean, it's great that they finally got back to it.
Yeah, it is good. I don't know about that cheeky challenge that put in that tweet to everyone. Like, hey guys, don't take it down. We won't bring it back. Hopefully no one does, but I have a feeling that very, very soon these are going to be down and will never come back. Because people can't help themselves.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of one of those things, right? It's like, there's no reason really to play Mario Kart 8 online anymore, right? Like, Mario Kart 8 Deluxe exists and is just objectively a better game. But, like, Splatoon is, like, kind of a loss if that goes offline forever, because, like, you know, that's the only place that it is. There's no Splatoon on the Switch. I mean, there's Splatoon 2 and 3, but, you know, there's a different game, different weapons. There's a whole bunch of weapons in the original Splatoon that haven't come back and seem like they're never coming back, so... It's still, you know, a part of Nintendo's history, so the idea that that could be gone is kind of daunting, but it's also kind of what the industry's moving towards with online gaming, in that, like, these things aren't always going to stay up forever.
I'll be honest, again, it's nice that they've done it, but at the same time, if they'd never turned them back on, I don't think anyone would have cared. Like, I remember when Crystal Chronicles Remastered launched on Switch here, you had a website, Ollie, checking, like, daily if the actual online functionality was still working, or still broken or not. Because, you know, they released it and it didn't work. And nobody has shown any level of interest like that for these games being offline. So I think it was more just that somebody remembered they hadn't turned them back on again. So, like, oh, let's just turn them on. There we go. So
I'm more intrigued about, like, did these communities even come back?
Well, I mean, it's hard to say. I'm not going to, like, plug in my Wii U to find out if people are still playing Splatoon, right? But I know that, like, there were, like, you could still, even in Australia, get, like, a Splatoon lobby going. If you jumped into Turf War, people would be there. But now, I mean, after it's been offline for 5 months, I imagine anybody who was even vaguely interested in playing the first Splatoon online is probably moved on to Splatoon 2 or 3.
Well, there probably would have been a bit of a resurgence, you know, over the weekend when it first came back up.
Yeah,
I'm sure, yeah.
Much like the Call of Duty fixes that happened on Xbox, they fixed up a whole bunch of lobbies, and all of a sudden all those lobbies were full again because people could play it, and so they're like, oh, let's try it out. But yeah, I don't think anyone's chomping at the bit for these. So,
yeah. Angelo, are you looking to jump back into Splatoon on the Wii U?
No. I mean, like, I dabbled a little bit when it first came out, but the game's also almost 10 years old. Like,
yeah.
I don't recall there was anything particularly important about the first game to keep it over like functionality of like the second and third games, if that makes any sense. Like the second and third games, the third one in particular, is like so much more feature rich than the first one at this point. Like,
yeah,
what is even the benefit of keeping the first? It's on a system that no one even plays really anymore much, outside of like speedrunners and, you know, stuff like that. So, yeah.
Yeah, oh, I mean, whatever. Like, yeah, that's, I think there's like four weapons that haven't made it over, and they've kind of been like, their roles have been repurposed into other weapons in.
Yeah, but like, is it, like, was it worth going back to playing the console just to do that? Like,
no, it certainly was not. And yeah, with Mario Kart, there's just a better version of it that like half of all Switch owners have, so.
It has, yeah, has more characters, more tracks, and has the actual working battle mode. Because the battle mode in regular Mario Kart 8 was not the best.
We are currently at
a different game at this point.
In the Sweden versus USA game.
You know what? I'm not sorry. yeah, it's also, the Deluxe is just a different game now. Like, they've changed the way characters play or how items work. Like, it's not the same in the slightest, so.
And let's face it too, Mario Kart 8 Deluxe also has Labo support for those people that still have their cardboard motorbike controls. Can't do that on the Wii U.
Would you want to do it on the Wii U?
I don't think anyone did it on the Switch.
Can you imagine, like, strapping the Wii U gamepad into like a big cardboard construction? Like, that would just be a terrible experience for everyone involved.
Yeah. Much like doing the Switch?
It's just like it's just like an Oculus Rift dev kit.
Yeah.
Giant chunky thing in your face.
But yeah, I mean, Michael, you're probably right. They're just gonna, like, Nintendo has effectively issued a challenge to people to take it offline forever. And people are gonna do it, right? They've said, like, oh yeah, if there's anything that makes it difficult, then we're gonna pull it offline, and like, people are gonna do it. That's just how the internet is. People do it just for the sake of having said that they did it. Like, they wanna be the reason that Splatoon is offline forever. But I mean even if it does get like pulled down.
I almost believe that Nintendo did it on purpose, so they don't have to run the servers anymore.
Sick of like running those servers, yeah.
Do you guys remember when, like, I think it was Halo 2, when Halo 2, the original on Xbox, was going offline, and there was a community of people who just kept their Xboxes plugged in just to keep playing, because the servers died as soon as the last person logged off. And like, it was still going for like months afterwards because people kept their consoles on until someone's power cut out.
Power went out.
That was actually kind of bonkers. I actually checked it on that every now and again. That was such an interesting sort of development on that one. But it just kept whittling down, like, after months, like, you know, fewer and fewer people were on it, and then just a couple of people, and then, yeah, one last person, I guess.
But I mean, like, the thing is, ultimately, if these do go down, like, much like with the Wii Online and, you know, the DS, how those are not officially online, but there are fan communities who have come up with inventive ways to recreate the online experience. I imagine exactly the same thing would happen here if these went offline forever. So
maybe some people resurrect Warp Pipe.
Maybe.
But like, such is life for online games. Like, if there's no community behind it, then it can't survive. Like, there's no point. And that's just the point of online gaming, right? We're going to see that more and more as we go further in the future. 100 years from now, is Destiny going to be a thing unless Activision is still beating that horse? Like,
Destiny's not even, like, that's the thing, right? The original content in Destiny is just, like, not there anymore. In Destiny 2, at least. Like, you just can't play it. And, like, that's within, like, one game release cycle, is they're already removing content. So the same thing's going to happen with all of these, like, huge games. They're not going to be playable. The content in them is going to be lost to time. And then people will eventually mod them to, you know, be able to play them again.
I know this is going to be an old man shouts at cloud comment, but don't play games as a service games. That's just my opinion.
Fair. I mean, totally agreed. I say, having played a bunch of Diablo 3 recently, Diablo 4 rather. Anyway, let's move on. So,
apparently Sweden 2, USA 3, by the way, at shootouts.
Wow. You're really time-stamping this game, like, real hard.
But yeah, they know exactly when we recorded this this podcast. There's new DLC for Mario & Rabbids Sparks of Hope that's coming out at the end of this month, on August 30th. It's a Rayman in the Phantom Show. So it has, you know, Rayman in it. He's there. And just, yeah, it's kind of funny to see Rayman being a side character in a Rabbids game when, you know, the Rabbids started as...
Technically, he's a side character in a Mario and a Rabbids game.
Yeah, he doesn't even get, like, a full Rabbids game to himself to be, like, a side character. And he's just, like, yeah, he's this, like, spin-off of a spin-off that you get to be a side character in during in a paid DLC that most people aren't going to play.
Yeah.
Man.
It's because Rabbids is the franchise now. It's no longer
Rayman. Yeah, Rabbids is the franchise. Rayman is dead.
Rabbids have been way bigger than Rayman for like the last 15 years or so.
But I believe that there's a space for Rayman to come back, like just like there was a space for Prince of Persia to come back, right? Like, Prince of Persia, nothing happened for such a long time. And then they're like, hell yeah, a new game that looks amazing. So maybe they can do the same with Rayman.
Teenagers today weren't even alive when the last... Prince of Persia game came out. At least the one worth a damn.
Yeah. And I mean, like, you know, so that means in like 5 or 6 years' time, we'll probably get a new Rayman game, right? Because teenagers alive then wouldn't have been alive for the last one. Anyway, I mean, like, I didn't play Sparks of Hope, so I don't know if it's any good. People say it's better than the first one, but it also did not sell super well, so I don't know. Is it good?
I mean, it's a much more refined experience over the first game, but it's the same thing. If you don't like tactical shooters, you're not going to like it regardless of how refined it is. It doesn't have the XCOM bullshit of you being point blank with a shotgun and then missing, which is something that I hate about the XCOM series.
That's always the worst, right?
Or it's, you know, you have a sniper rifle, the laser's right on thing, and then the bullet misses, and you're like, But look, honestly, the whole DLC thing for this game is weird. Like, this is the third DLC pack, but you can only buy 2 and 3 separately. If you want the first DLC, you have to buy the season pass for it, or whatever they call the stupid thing. So they've just done it weird. I mean, if you love the gameplay, then sure, it's just another character like the Donkey Kong expansion for the first game. But, you know, if you're not a Rayman fan, this is probably not going to make much difference to you.
I haven't seen this game, the game itself, marketed particularly well. Like, when that game came out, I just came up with a FUD, in my sphere at least. I never saw any, like, TV ads or anything like that.
Well, I think part of the issue, right, is that, like, Nintendo was in charge of the advertising for the first one, and Nintendo went real hard on it. Mm, and then Ubisoft seems to have been in charge of the advertising for the second one, and boy, they really have
the
not
done... The first one also had crying Ubisoft man hype behind it, so...
Yeah.
That's true.
Well, because it also leaked. The first one leaked and built up all this expectation, and then people were like, oh, this is very different to what I thought it was going to be. I will say, too, though, the first game, because it was such an unknown, people were very curious on it. You know, it's like, okay, this is Mario with guns and rabbits, and it's turn-based. Like, it's a very weird thing. And I also just think the second one, Ubisoft, unfortunately, they have this problem where they release a game and it doesn't sell 10 million copies in 2 days. So they discount it by like 50% within like the first 6 weeks. And most gamers know now, if you want a Ubisoft game, don't buy it on day one. Buy it, you know, at the end of the first month, and you'll be able to save $30, $40, $50 off whatever the retail price is. So I think that doesn't help their case. And then even the Ubisoft CEO said that, you know, they may have released it in the wrong time.
Can I say, if anyone enjoys people watching, I very much recommend watching the video version of this podcast so you can see Angelo's face as whatever happens in the game that he's watching right now. Like, you just see his live reactions to them. Angelo.
I'm watching Sweden versus USA, the Women's World Cup game, and Sweden just took a shot in the penalty shootouts, and the goalie had saved it, punched it out. The ball was coming back into the goal, and she punched it out again. But I think the ref has allowed the goal, even though it got saved. That's nuts, which means that they won.
Yeah.
I also want to remind everyone, this is definitely a 100% professional podcast.
Well, like, Sweden just won. USA is out of the Women's World Cup. Yeah. USA have won four Women's World Cups previously.
Yeah.
So yeah,
I should point out just back to the actual topic that isn't sports. with Sparks of Hope, I have not played it, but I have listened to the soundtrack because the lead composer on it was Yoko Shimomura, who's done Kingdom Hearts and a bunch of other stuff and is a wonderful composer.
Hey, Ollie, who's your favorite composer?
Probably Yoko Shimomura.
Yeah, I was making the joke because you've mentioned her like the last four episodes straight.
Yeah, I mean, she's great. I've been playing Kingdom Hearts Melody of Memory lately and it's great.
I will say too, Grant Kirkhope did a lot of the soundtrack too, and he did like the Donkey Kong expansion. And obviously he's the guy who did, you know, the DK rap from back in the day. The soundtrack in both games is fantastic.
And GoldenEye, let's not forget.
Oh yeah, Grant Kirkhope's done a lot. He's done some pretty amazing things. But yeah, I just think that Ollie's right. The soundtrack in Sparks of Hope is fantastic across the board.
It is. It is like very clearly like Yoko Shimomura getting bored that there's no new Kingdom Hearts games, so just like pumping out bangers. But you know,
I will raise this up and say the only Mario soundtrack that is perhaps better is the Mario movie soundtrack. The actual orchestral soundtrack for that one is pretty epic. But that's because it didn't have to focus on gameplay. It was just like literally, you know, to the actual on-screen action.
And then they fucked it up with licensed music.
Oh, that last goal was so good. Such a good goal.
Jesus Christ. Do you want to go, Angela? I mean, you know,
everyone just pause this show like and go look at the highlights. It was such a good goal. That last goal.
Oh my god.
All right, let's move on. So Nintendo Australia itself is now selling physical games and hardware on the My Nintendo Store. So the Nintendo Australia web store is selling games and consoles. Previously, only special edition consoles were available there, like the Switch OLED, the Pokemon OLED, and I think the Splatoon one as well. I think those are the only ones that have been on there.
Yeah. They've also occasionally they'll do like special edition pro controllers and such, but
yeah. In terms of like actual consoles, it's only been special edition stuff. But yeah, now they're selling physical games. So it's only first party games, or as Luke corrected me before the show, games that are distributed by Nintendo Australia, which includes some things that aren't first party games, like also Rain Code, probably. I don't know.
Yeah, Master Detective Rain Code. Yeah. Whatever the full name of that stupid game is.
Yeah. And yeah. So I mean, it's they're probably not going to add more than that. But this is another place to buy games, I guess. What's like kind of dodgy about it, right? Is that like previously the Nintendo Store had this thing where like if you bought a game or if you bought something from there and you spent over $80, you got free shipping. But now, when they add these, if you spend over $80, you don't get free shipping. You need to spend $100 to get free shipping, which like it's kind of fair because like it would be really annoying if you were 5 cents short because most of these games are $79.95. But they could just make them $80 or make like $79.95 the cutoff point.
Yeah.
But yeah,
I don't understand why you'd buy games from the Nintendo Store. Like I really don't get it.
Yeah,
if you're buying physically, right? Like why? I mean, like, I guess, like, in some, like, if you live, like, right by the Nintendo offices and you can pick it up, then, like, it might be worth it.
I guess?
Because, like, there's no shipping, but, like, if you live there, you're, like, not that far from an EB anyway, and you probably can get it cheaper if you price match at EB.
Yeah. Well, EB don't price match anymore, but,
yeah.
I will say, the only reason I would think to shop for here is if either you're, you don't care about the price, which is a weird thing. Everyone should care about what they're paying for their games. But I think the only reason would be that Nintendo is more likely to have some older games available in the future. Whereas, you know, sometimes like EB will not get copies of, we'll say everybody wants to Switch, right? They may not stock them after Christmas. But if you really need that game next year, the chances of finding it on the Nintendo shop are fairly likely compared to anywhere else. So that would be the only time I would say shop here.
The other thing that was pointed out to me about this, and I think it's a reasonably good point, is that like if you're buying a console and you were going to pay full price for it anyway, you're probably better off buying it directly from Nintendo, just because the way that Australian warranty law works, like,
yeah,
you kind of have to go to the retailer before you go to the manufacturer, and the retailer isn't really going to make any effort to solve your problem. So, like, Nintendo being both a retailer and the manufacturer just, like, cuts out the middleman, and, like, if you have any problems with your console in the first couple years of its life, like, it's going to be a lot smoother process, because you can say, hey, I bought this directly from you. You can fix it. Here you go. But, like, buying
games... I'll say, depending who you buy it from, you may have better success dealing with them than with Nintendo, depending on what the issue is.
I think Nintendo's support is generally pretty solid, but, like, it varies a lot, I think, depending on who is actually handling the case, and, yeah. I don't know. I think, like, Nintendo is more likely to just, like, replace your console if something's wrong with it, because they can always, like, take the parts and repurpose it for other consoles and shit.
Yeah.
But,
look, yeah. I think it comes down to, if Nintendo Australia didn't do this, nobody would complain that they weren't selling games and base hardware. But it also means that, you know, when Switch 2 or Switch Pro or whatever the hell this next console is called is officially announced, the odds of you being able to place an order with Nintendo and getting it on release day are likely better than if you try and do it from Amazon or having to deal with crowds at your local EB or whatever. So...
Really? Yeah, I mean, I don't know, man. I don't know if Nintendo would ship their consoles that early.
I had this conversation with Vooks, and I suspect it's probably going to be a distance thing. Like, if you live in, like, Queensland, they might send it out on the Wednesday before launch on the Friday.
The way that they're doing it currently, if it's, like, a pre-order item, like Amiibo or a controller or whatever, they do send it out early, depending on the distance. But if it's, like, you know, the next Nintendo console, I think they're probably just going to wait until launch day and then ship them all out. I don't think they're going to take chances on.
I don't know if Nintendo would do this. You can definitely work with a very good courier to organize that had to happen. Like, I know that happened with Telstra All Access and Xbox Series X launch stuff, because that's how I got my Series X, and that arrived on launch day.
Like, it happened with Telstra. They did that very well. iPhone.
Yeah, years exactly. ago,
when we started, I say we, when I was working at Telstra, and we were doing iPhone launches online. We were working with couriers to deliver them on the day of release. So, you know, some couriers had them like a day or two before just to make sure they were actually delivered on the actual release day. So it is possible. But again, the only reason to buy from Nintendo Australia direct is if you're buying some of the Nintendo merch from Japan that they stock occasionally. That's the only
reason. And then you also want to spend like $60 on everybody wanting to Switch.
Or that, or you really, really, really just want a Splatoon-themed scrunchie or a Kirby mousepad.
I've come so close to buying that scrunchie so many times, man. I'm not even kidding. Every time I go into the store, I see that scrunchie, and I was like, man, I should get that. But I never do.
On a Kirby mousepad.
I have to justify the price of shipping for all those free things.
Yeah, $8.
I say free things.
Oh. Alright, let's move on to something that's actually interesting. Legend of Zelda Oracle of Ages and Oracle of Seasons are on Switch Online now. I'm so excited for this. These are just two incredible games. And yeah, I've become, like, totally Oracle-pilled. Just all about Oracle of Ages. I've been playing it, and it's just so much fun. I forgot how much... Just how great it was, because I haven't played it since it released. Essentially. It's like 20 years ago I played these games. But yeah,
I was going to make a really bad joke then, but I've decided not to because. The fact that they didn't announce that these were coming, like normally for Nintendo stuff, they tend to say, "Hey, you know, these games are coming out on this date next," you know, so we get like a week's notice or a few days' notice. These were just like, "Hey, they're out now," which is a bit of a rare thing for Nintendo.
TikTok on Golden Sun.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to happen next month. I think because like September is like when the renewals would start happening again for Switch Online.
Mm-hmm.
So like Golden Sun is like the kind of people that would subscribe to expansion pack. But that would be the kind of people who would be interested in Golden Sun, I think. So
I did pull up the list, and it's in the Slack from a few weeks ago now. Whenever this launched. And there's only like 6 games across all the platforms that are still to come out, and that includes like the Mario Party 3 and, you know, 1080, not 1080, the other one, Excitebike for 64 and all that sort of stuff. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I love these games. I would have loved to have seen them bring, you know, the cancelled third one, resurrect that for it. That'd be amazing, but take what I can get, I suppose.
Imagine I love these games. Sorry, as much as I love these games, these are not the two Zelda games I wanted to be released on Switch. if they can get on that, that'd be great.
Imagine if they released Star Fox 2. That'd be pretty good.
I mean, they can. They've done it now previously. I will say, though...
Switch probably couldn't handle it, though. You know,
probably not. I did account, with these added to it, the only Zelda games not on Switch are Twilight Princess, Wind Waker, Link Between Worlds, Triforce Heroes, and Four Swords Adventure.
And the CDI games.
Only games published by Nintendo. Only Zelda games published by Nintendo, not on Switch, are... so it's actually, there's, you know, very few remaining. So,
yeah.
If Nintendo want to complete that collection, they've got to bring those HD games to Switch.
Also, Star Fox 2 is literally already on it.
Is it?
Yeah.
Really?
It has been for 4 years now, apparently.
What?
Yeah, 2019.
Star Fox 2.
Yeah.
It's anyway. Like you missed the memo.
Bonkers. I absolutely... That flew past me.
With Oracle of Ages and Seasons, I think a lot of people have misconceptions about how these games work, and they think that it's like a Pokemon situation where it's like basically the same game, but a couple of things have changed. That's not how it is. It basically, you play one, and then the second one becomes a sequel to the first one that you play. And it's like implemented in a really clever way. It's genuinely impressive how they managed to pull it off, because it doesn't matter which one you play first, the other one becomes a sequel, and it's just wild.
Do they just change the tenses? Is it just instead of is, everything is was?
No.
Okay.
You can carry over, like, items and stuff. There's, like, extra upgrades that you can get, like, characters have, like, grown up and shit. Specifically the character that you get to name, who... Literally everyone who I know who's playing the game right now has named that child a very inappropriate name. It's a really clever system. The only issue with the games on Nintendo Switch is that they're not booting in GBA mode, which means that there were special features that were available to the games if you played them on a GBA. One of very few Game Boy Color games that you could do that with. That means that, like, there's one ring that you can't get, which means you technically can't 100% it. But there's, like, websites you can go on to, like, generate a secret, which is the code system that they use to just, like, get them to give you a GBA ring anyway. So it's not a big deal, but it is, like, a little bit weird that it's not launching in GBA mode.
I also was a bit sad that we didn't get, like, a Link's Awakening remake of these.
Yeah, but I don't think it's, like, impossible that could happen.
I'm not saying it's not. I'm just saying I would have preferred a remake of them over the porting of them into Switch Online. But that's just because I think, that Link's Awakening style was just done so well. And, of course, these look very much like the same Link's Awakening style from Game Boy. So,
yeah.
But these are also the only other games apart from Minish Cap made by Capcom.
Yeah. So these were the first games where the director who worked on Tears of the Kingdom, I can't remember what his name is, the director who worked on Tears of the Kingdom also worked on these, and these were the first Zelda games that he worked on.
AGI Numa?
No, he's the producer. There's actually another guy who directed the game.
Shigeru Miyamoto?
No.
Yuji Naka?
No, he's in prison now. Let's see.
Yoko Shimomura?
I wish. Hidemaru Fujibayashi.
Hideo Kojima.
So he started with Oracle of Seasons, went through Four Swords, Minish Cap, Phantom Hourglass, Skyward Sword, and then Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom. These are the first games from the dude who made Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom, which...
Is he also the guy who directed Skyward Sword? Because, you know, that takes some of the shine off his work if he also directed also that game.
He was also the lead writer for that game, so, you know.
Oh, God.
He has hits and misses. Michael, what do you think of Oracle of Ages and Seasons?
Like, it's great. Oh, sorry, I thought my mic was off for a second. Yeah, no, it's awesome that it's on there. Like, it's about time. Like, I think everyone who enjoys Zelda should definitely take the time to actually get some time to play them, because they're awesome games.
Yeah. And I remember, Michael, a little while back, you were playing the original Game Boy Link's Awakening on stream. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
And played one of the whole thing. Frustrating parts of that game is, like, having to swap items and stuff.
Sure is.
Now, you still have to do that in Oracle of Ages and Seasons, but, like, mm-hmm. the way that the game, like, it actually turns it into a game mechanic rather than just being a frustration. So there's a point in the Oracle of Ages where, like, you get trapped on this island and you have to, like, swap items in and out to be able to, like, progress. And it's, like, really, really cool and fun puzzle-solving stuff. And a lot of the dungeons are like that as well. It's kind of, like, dependent on you swapping out to two particular items. And I think it's a lot better than Link's Awakening. Having said that, if it got a remake, I would still want it to be like Link's Awakening, where they put like key things on shoulder buttons and extra buttons and stuff. Like
The
sword and the shield should always just be like something that is on a dedicated button. And like, there's technically no Pegasus boots in this game. But the seed bag should probably be on its dedicated button as well. But yeah.
I will say, the Pegasus boots are one of my favorite old school Zelda items. Because they're just fun.
They are. And they got replaced in Oracle games with Pegasus seeds, which effectively are the same thing. But yeah, go play Ages and Seasons. Ages is the better game, but I would recommend playing it first. For anyone interested in playing through both games, play Ages first, because Seasons is a bit dull unless you have the legacy of it being a sequel. One more news thing. I don't know how long we've been running for. Half an hour. We got plenty of time. So Bluey is finally getting a video game. So everyone's favorite Queensland Blue Healer is getting a video game, but unfortunately it comes at a bit of a cost, because it's not being developed or published by an Australian studio, instead being developed by, what's the name of the company, Artax Games, and published by Outright. So Artax is a Spanish developer, and Outright is, I don't even know where they're based, but...
They're a UK company.
There you go. So, it's a little bit disappointing. Here's a description of it, according to the Australian Classification Board, because, yeah, this game leaked. It has not been officially revealed, but it leaked through the Classification Board in Australia. So, it says, follow the Healer family on a holiday adventure to find a treasure hidden by Bandit and his brothers many years ago. The game takes place in five iconic show locations, and its story mode tells a family-friendly adventure about creating your own cherished moments with your family. Memories with your family. I mean, it does sound, like, cute, but it absolutely should have been made by an Australian developer. And it's really, really disappointing that it wasn't.
It's definitely a missed opportunity. Like, Bluey is so iconically Australian in every way. From, obviously, the voice actors to the studio that makes it, to the myriad of references in the show and the show's locations. Like... I'm not saying that, you know, non-Australians can't make a good Bluey game, potentially, but I think it's probably going to lose a little bit of flavour.
Yeah. I mean, there's a certain amount of, I don't know, there's a certain amount of, like, charm that comes from Bluey being a uniquely Australian thing, and if it's not being made by Australians, you're kind of going to lose a little bit of that charm, I think.
The part that sort of worries me about the game is just the fact that so Outright Games also did the Peppa Pig game that Michael used for 20 questions way back in the day. But when they did that, the only voice actor they brought in from the show was the girl that voices Peppa Pig. Every other character was voiced by somebody different. It wasn't actually voiced by the cast of the show. So there's the potential they might do that same thing here in order to try and save on money.
Can you imagine if they get like British
the
actors
outrage.
To do Australian accents for the Bluey game? Like that would be... We'd have to like reinvade the UK, honestly.
Yeah. Outright Games has become... They're the THQ of the modern day. So they're doing all the licensed stuff. So
THQ is the THQ of the modern day.
Just in terms of licensing. So you know they've done How to Train Your Dragon, How to Train Your Dragon. They've done two games in that. They've done Zoids. They've done Transformers. They just announced not My Little Pony, though they actually did one of those too. The horses, the DreamWorks horses thing years ago.
They've done Ben 10 as well.
Ben 10, Hotel Transylvania.
Paw Patrol stuff, if it's a child thing, they've done a game based on it. And let's move on to the games that we're playing, though. Michael, tell us about the games that you've been playing.
Lately, I've been playing a little bit of Ghost Trick. I ended up importing the physical copy from Asia, which is nice. So cool, we're playing through that again. And I picked up Baldur's Gate 3 on PC when it launched this week, and I re-rolled my character 4 times. And I finally stuck on one, and I've started playing through it. I think I've played maybe like 6 or 7 hours, according to Steam. But I've probably actually played the game for maybe like an hour and a half. The rest of that time was making characters and re-rolling. But it's great. If you enjoy D&D, and I do mean if you enjoy D&D specifically and how D&D works, you will enjoy the game. Do not expect a game that isn't literally how D&D works. Because I've seen so many people complain about it, about how combat works and all that type of stuff, and how they don't like how there's dice rolls. I'm like, it's literally D&D as a game. Like, I don't know how much clearer they could have been about this in like the marketing, but whatever.
That's the thing, right? Like, people watch Stranger Things, they're like, oh man, D&D, I want to give that a crack. And then they just try and they're just like, I don't know what I'm doing.
If you are a Switch player and you're not interested in Baldur's Gate 3 or you're bit unsure about it, Baldur's Gate and Baldur's Gate 2 Enhanced Editions are available on Switch. So they're the original Baldur's Gate games that were initially done by BioWare. The first one was BioWare. I think the second one was Obsidian? No. Who did the second one?
I don't remember. But also, they're all also different because they run off all the D&D rules, and also combat is real-time in those old games and turn-based in the new game. So... Yeah. Also, Baldur's don't Gate go into that game knowing like, think it's going to be like that either.
Yeah, it's a lot like Divinity Original Sin, right? But like, which is also made by Larian. But I think like Divinity 2 is like on the Switch as well, so play that as well.
Yeah, that was also the first game that let you bring your save in from Steam. So
yeah,
Divinity 2 is also on iPad.
It is good game. What character did you play, Michael? I'm curious to know, as someone who's also playing Baldur's Gate 3.
I'm playing a light domain cleric. It is a my brain is blanking so hard right now. Oh my god!
Good thing you spent all this time creating a character.
I have this panic moment, like mind blank, where I can't think of anything. A tiefling. God damn it! I could not think of the word. I'm playing a tiefling. And yes, I did hauntingly spend a lot of time over my character's genitalia, because that's an option you can choose, and why not?
It's a shame you can't give it horns.
I mean, that particular thing, you can't give that horns.
So I've also been playing Baldur's Gate 3. I'm playing a forest gnome druid. So I was just like, what's the weirdest little guy I can make? And forest gnome was the way to go. If you don't like Dungeons and Dragons, you won't like this, because like it is just Dungeons and Dragons, and like just everything, like you will just like get an unlucky roll in combat and just be immediately killed sometimes, and you know that's how it works in Dungeons and Dragons, but that's how it works here too. So like if you just like roll a 0, like sorry, well, a 1 I guess, get screwed. You're going to die.
I will say, and we're talking about this before we started the podcast, you can save scum exceedingly well in this game. You can literally save the game mid. I don't know if you can save mid combat, but you can definitely save mid conversation, like in the exact point that you're talking. So you can just choose whatever you want.
In combat as well.
Oh, there you go.
Turn you can. And if you're playing on PC with a mouse and keyboard, you can just press F5 to quick save.
Mm-hmm. And F8 to quick load. Don't ask me how I know.
I have like a custom mouse profile set up for like my forward and back buttons for Baldur's Gate 3 as like a quick save and quick load.
Oh my god.
Because it's just like, it's so prevalent. But yeah. So I've been playing that. That's a lot of fun. Also been playing Oracle of Ages, of course. Disney Illusion Island, which I did not care for. And a bunch of other stuff that I can't remember. It's been a very busy couple weeks for me in terms of games. Angelo, you've been playing Divinity.
Yeah, so I returned to Divinity Original Sin 2 after getting it last year, and I mustn't have built my team up properly or something, because when I loaded up my save for the first time in a year, I was just at this point that I just couldn't progress, and I just got really stuck. So I just decided, screw it, I'm just going to play with mods and cheat my way through, because I do not care anymore. I just want to get through the story, I just want to have fun. I find redoing battles over and over again that last half an hour is not fun. So yeah, I just kind of gave myself lots of gold, leveled myself up a few times, and started actually getting through some of these fights a little more easily. I mean, it's still taking me some time. Like, I'm not entirely cheesing everything, but
yeah, does Divinity have a story mode difficulty?
I couldn't find one. It might be somewhere, but I looked once and just didn't bother looking again. I couldn't find it. So I just did that. It's a bit of a butt backwards way of doing it. Like, you have to get a mod and then find like the cheat commander, which is a character in the game who you can like sort of converse with, and he'll give you extra stats and things like that, or you can see his wares and he'll give you money, and then you buy like all sorts of expensive fancy gear from him and stuff. But you know, it works.
An interesting way of doing cheats. It's not just like you open up the game when you've put the cheats on, you have everything. It's way of doing it. So
yeah, you don't open up like a .ini file and just like put in your own values or anything like that and make yourself a god. But yeah, apart from that, like, I'm actually really quite enjoying it. I've forgotten how like nice this game is to look at. And then, you know, obviously I'm looking forward to playing Baldur's Gate 3 as well, but I want to sort of finish this game off because I'd already started this one. And I do want to try and play through Baldur's Gate 1 and 2 before getting to 3, but you know, that'll probably take me like another 5 years just on their own. So
it's a long time, yeah.
Yeah. It's going to take forever. Divinity Original Sin 2 runs really well on the Steam Deck as well, which is nice. Just drains the battery like hell. Like, you only get like an hour and a half or so of playtime. Yeah, it really cranks it. But yeah, it's really enjoyable. I've also been playing Advance Wars on Steam Deck because I didn't want to wait for Nintendo to finally release the GBA version, so I just thought, screw it, I'm just going to emulate it. And yeah, really enjoying it so far. Love the art style, love the music. The story is just silly, it's all goofy. You know, mm-hmm. There's a kid in there who becomes a general or a commander or something like that, just typical animation like stuff. Just, of course, a child is in charge of the army, why not? But yeah, super enjoying that too.
That's awesome.
And Luke, what have you been playing?
I also played Disney Illusion Island. I think it's a fine game. It's definitely built like a Metroidvania, except there's no combat. And even when you get into boss fights, it's not really a boss fight, it's more a boss puzzle. I honestly think, especially because it's, you know, more aimed at children, the fact that you can't even defend yourself against attacks, like there's no shield, seems to be like a big oversight. And I had this, like, they call it Disney Illusion Island, but there's never any goddamn mention about why it's called Illusion Island. It's not, the island isn't imaginary. It doesn't fade away at the end of the game. You can still run around.
It's just an island.
It's just an island. It's just, they called Illusion Island for some reason. So that's a weird thing. But the overall story is also a bit weird. It sort of bounces all over the place. And I did notice, and this is me because I spend a lot of time in the voice actor world, but the Brett Iwan, who does the voice of Mickey, he's one of the two voices of Mickey because Disney are weird at the moment. He doesn't sound like he used to. He sounds a little more gravelier. So the Mickey voice is slightly different than what it has been for the last like 15 years since he took over. But the voice of Goofy is still Bill Farmer and Tony and Salimo is still doing Donald Duck, so they still sound like they used to. Those guys are approaching 40 years of voicing those characters. So, you know. But yeah, I mean, that's a fine game. I've also been playing through the Splinter Cell series. I finished off Double Agent this week, just gone. So I've only got two more to go in that series, and then I'll be moving on to the next game series.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah, my big issue with Disney Illusion Island is that, like, it's a Metroidvania, right? But, like, there's no reason to explore anything because it just gives you a big arrow and tells you where to go.
The one thing that annoyed me about it is I'm like, oh, I collected this card, and they're like, oh, and you know, you go to the, goes, press this to see what you've unlocked, and it's like one corner of a picture. I'm like, oh, okay, I don't care about finding the game's art style.
Yeah,
I'm not.
There's no reason to explore anything. You just
yeah,
go to
except
where
for the, except for the fact that those pictures you unlock when you unlock all six items in that frame, it gives you an extra heart. It gives you a health upgrade, but the game doesn't tell you this. It's just a little. It's a half, you know, thing text on the screen. It just, the game just doesn't explain anything except it has a giant arrow telling you where you need to go every single time.
Anyway, so if you want your kids to get into Metroidvanias, just give them Hollow Knight. They'll figure it out eventually.
Yeah, or you know, any of the old Metroid games, because you know they're not that complicated.
I played Super Metroid kind of as a kid. I was terrible at it and didn't really play it properly until later in life, but.
Yeah. I mean, there's plenty of Castlevania games around now.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I think that's everyone. So, 20 questions time. Angela, you've picked one for us.
Yeah, so I've got a couple of suggestions, which I was going to use, but I might keep in my back pocket for another time, because I thought of another game that I thought might be a good one to do that I remember from my youth, but I'm not sure if anyone else here played it, so I'm interested.
Maybe like some super obscure game that we've never heard of before.
I mean, like, Angela's due a hard one, so that'll be fine by me.
Well, I don't know if it's hard, I don't know if it's easy. Like, I'm genuinely curious to see how you guys.
Yeah, to be fair, I didn't think Trauma Center was going to be hard, and then it turned out to be insanely difficult, so who knows. Anyway, let's start off. Was this game released on January 1st, 2010, or after?
2010, sorry. No, it wasn't.
Okay. Was this game released on January 1st, 2000 or after?
No, it wasn't.
Okay. So, I mean, if we're playing, if Angelo said he played it as a kid, it's probably going to be a Super Nintendo. But he didn't have a Super Nintendo as a kid. He was a Sega kid.
Oh, Mega Drive, one of the two.
Is this?
I don't even think I said when I was a kid. I just said, oh, maybe I guess in my youth.
I think you did, yeah.
I mean, was this game released in the 90s?
Yes.
Was this game on a home console?
Yes.
Alright, so NES 64.
I think NES is unlikely, surely. Just in the grand scheme of things, right? Like, it's possible, but unlikely. Because, like,
definitely
who
the
fondly
least
remembers an NES game, right?
It's definitely the least likely, but who knows?
Solomon's Key.
What? You're talking about the game I talked about? That was Solstice? Thank you?
Oh, sorry, Solstice, sorry.
The quest for the laughing. Staff of Demnos?
Yeah.
Hello?
I don't know how. I honestly have no idea how I got those two mixed up. My bad. You remember that one, probably, don't you?
Yeah, it is a good game. Oh, man. We've got to narrow down the system. Otherwise, we're just going to be like trapped in this hell. I'm just going to ask, is it a Super Nintendo game?
No.
Oh, okay. If it's a NES game, it's going to be amazing.
I'm going to assume Nintendo 64 for the moment.
We're going to ask if it has 3D graphics.
Yeah, I was just about to say that's probably a good question.
Probably should have just asked that. That could have knocked out too. Oh, but also, yeah, it doesn't matter. Anyway, go.
Does this game have 3D graphics?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. 64 game.
So unless there was some very advanced NES game that we don't know of, it's probably a 64.
I think we literally raised that point last week with Michael's game when we were trying to like narrow down platforms. All right. So 64 game. Was this game published by Nintendo?
Yes, it was.
Oh, damn. That's narrowed down some games.
I mean, not released to 64. There was very few that weren't published by Nintendo.
Yeah, I know, but still.
Okay. I mean,
I'm thinking Snowboard Kids. Just as an outlet.
Wasn't that Atlus?
Yeah, but in Europe and Australia, it was published by Nintendo, so.
Okay.
I don't know about Snowboard Kids 2.
All right, this might help. Is this game part of a series?
I can't really answer that.
Okay.
I won't ask a follow-up question then if you're not going to count it.
What's your follow-up question? I'll decide.
I'm going to ask, can I answer it because you don't know or for some other reason?
I'll just say it'll be up for debate.
Okay.
So
that's 7 questions.
Okay, was this game developed in Japan?
No.
Okay.
Was this game developed in Europe?
Bear with me while I quickly look that up.
I need to insert like the Who Wants to Be a Millionaire music when they phone a friend.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say no, but that's a soft no.
Okay. Because I'm now thinking it might be a LucasArts game because they were developed in North America, but Factor 5 was a German studio for many, many years.
I'll say I wouldn't read into what that answer
is. No, not for that reason, but just in the fact that, you know, it's published by Nintendo, but not developed in Japan. It generally means it's a Western developed title, and there's not many of them that, you know, weren't done by Rare.
So what was the answer to the question, by the way? Was it
it was a soft no to being... Oh, wait, no. To... What was the question? It was
the published in Europe one.
Developed in
published
Europe.
Oh, sorry, developed in Europe, sorry.
Yeah, so it was a soft no.
What does that mean?
It means like so many games, right?
It means I'm not entirely like 100% sure where the developer is based because the information isn't entirely clear. So I would assume that it's not Europe. That's what I'm saying. Okay. It's a soft no because I can't I can't commit to the answer. But I don't think it is.
Oh god.
I kind of have to get like was that a... There was like a weird like orby like Tetris thingy, right?
Tetrisphere?
Tetrisphere, that's the one.
I like that orby Tetris thing.
That orby Tetris thing.
I mean, yeah, but I'm pretty sure that was developed in Japan.
I don't know. I don't know where any of the N64 developers were, so...
Is this game a licensed title?
No. At least I don't think it is.
Probably not like a Star Wars or a GoldenEye or something.
No, it's definitely not like that. So that's 10, by the way. Oh wait, going back to the was it developed in Europe question, it is not, I can confirm.
Okay. After some hardcore Googling in the background.
Yep.
Is this a racing game?
No.
I mean, is this a puzzle game?
Yes.
Oh.
Okay. It's Orbi Tetris. It's got to be. Maybe it's not. I don't know.
I'm trying to think what other puzzle games even were on the 64. Like, maybe that's why it. Yeah, maybe it could be Tetrasphere, because that maybe is why he answered if it's questionable, if it's part of a series.
Yeah.
Yeah, but Tetris is a licensed thing, though.
Yeah, no, but is Tetrasphere, officially a Tetris game? Is one of those, like, just bullshit scam Tetris games that somehow exists out of the licensing?
I believe it is an officially licensed one, but...
But, like, when we talk about licensed game, we're talking about, like, things that were, like, existing in other media and then licensed for use in video games. Like, I don't think anybody would say that, like, Tetris 99 is a licensed
game. Yeah, fair.
It kind of is.
I mean, could it be Pokemon Puzzle League?
Could be.
Because it's technically part of a series in the Pokemon, but it's not... There's never been a sequel to it. I have no clue.
I don't know if I've ever even seen Tetrasphere, like, the game.
I'm pretty sure it's on my shelf behind me. Does this game contain Pokemon characters?
No.
Okay.
I was gonna ask, does this game contain Tetraminos? You were gonna be like, you didn't know what that was, and I was like, please don't make me explain what Tetraminos are.
No, sorry, just the pronunciation just threw me for a second there.
Oh, is it not pronounced like that?
I've only ever heard it pronounced Tetronimos.
Oh. Is it Tetronimos?
I don't know. That's what I'm saying. That's why I was throwing that. Like, maybe it's just the way I've heard it. I've heard it as
Tetraminos.
So.
Google, help me.
I mean, yeah,
how do you pronounce it? Does now.
But was it a yes or a no?
It was a yes.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. I'm watching a video on how to pronounce Tetramino. I'll get back to you shortly.
I don't know if it's the same guy, but there's a whole series of things. It's like, hey, do you pronounce this word? And the guy goes, it's like, word. Comes from this word. And it's like, okay.
Yeah, so the only video that I found on how to pronounce it is, like, a robot saying it. So I'm not going to go with that. But it did say it Tetramino, but I'm not going to take a robot saying it as canon.
I mean, I can't think of any other game that it could be other than Tetris, right?
Is there another Tetris game on...
I mean, Puyo Puyo versus Tetris didn't happen until, like, the Switch, but... There's so many Tetris games.
Another Tetris game.
I mean, okay, let me ask this. Does this game take... This is such a specific question. Does this game take a previous game concept and somehow add spheres to it?
I guess, yes, it does.
I think we can. I think we can tap out there, right? We can just see. I guess
it has to be that. I mean, you called it pretty early, I guess. So this one's for you. If this is correct, which I'm assuming it is, I don't think I ever saw this game as a kid growing up, and I would love to know the story of how you played it. Like, did you own it? Yeah. Anyway, we'll continue.
Is this game Tetrasphere?
Okay. That's your 16th question. You're fine with that?
Yes.
Okay, let's ask the meta question before we ask it.
Right. Okay, sure.
Let's get it out of the way. Have we mentioned this game?
Yes.
Excellent. Okay, cool.
Is this game Tetris?
Okay, on your 17th question. Developed by H2O Entertainment, which is based in Alberta, Canada, as I discovered. Published by Nintendo. Released in North America on August 11, 97, and in PAL regions in February 1998. It is a puzzle game that has single-player and multiplayer modes for Nintendo 64 called Tetrisphere.
Thing. All right. Tell me the story.
Good. Oh, I just hired it from the video shop and it was a banger.
All right, good.
It was great.
All right, that was way less interesting than I expected.
You've got like a couple of like, I think it's like multiple layers of a sphere, and like it's literally just all tetronomos. And you just instead of, I think it's instead of dropping the blocks in, you're sort of removing them. And you're trying to work your way into the core of the sphere, and then like this little dude with eyes sort of pops out.
It's basically like the Doctor game with the light up nose.
Kind of Operation.
Operation. Oh, yeah.
It's basically that, but with Tetris.
With the light up nice. Jeez.
I couldn't think of it. the funny thing is, you mentioned that the company's in Canada, because Tetris 64 was also developed in Canada.
See, I didn't even know there was a Tetris 64.
There's technically three Tetris games on the 64, and then one on the DD.
H2O Entertainment, because I've never heard of them before.
Yeah, so I tried to look them up and I couldn't find them, but then there was a paragraph further down on the Wikipedia.
Sounds like they sunk.
Found something on the Nintendo Wiki for them. They did Tetrisphere, the new Tetris, apparently another N64 Tetris game. Never heard of that one.
It was a great game. It was really cool.
Yeah, sorry. The Game Boy Color version of the Flintstones, Big Trouble in Bedrock, and something called Aiden Chronicles.
I remember Aiden Chronicles.
And yeah, it was
decent reviews. I might check it out.
Yeah, it's great. I do recommend checking it out. There's a long play on YouTube, which is literally just like an hour long. You could just check out a couple levels. But the point that someone made is exactly the issue that I had. Is like it's unclear whether or not this is part of a series. I don't think it is, because it's not officially licensed by Alexey Pajitnov or anything like that, or the Tetris company, from what I understand.
Yeah.
But it has Tetris in the name.
Well, that's what I said. You know, I was saying there's always these weird rip-off Tetris games that just like existed.
Yeah.
The reason I know about this is like back in my youth, when you used to be able to rent a console, when we, like, our Video Easy store, when you rented a Nintendo 64, Tetrisphere was included. I remember, like, trying it, and I didn't know what I was doing. I was just pressing buttons and failing. And then I, like, promptly forgot about it for a long time. And then in 2020, there was a speedrun of it in AGDQ, which... it was very funny, and I was like, damn, this has unlocked some memories for me. And now it's just like stuck in my brain always that Tetrisphere was a thing. So if you don't have an hour to watch a long play of Tetrisphere, you could watch the 33-minute long GDQ run.
I mean, just watch like 2 or 3 minutes of it. You get the point of the whole game.
Yeah, you get the point.
Concept is quite simple. But yeah, I just remember kind of playing it the first time and be like, whoa, this is kind of cool. A completely different take on Tetris.
Nintendo Power gave it the best soundtrack award for 1997.
Hmm.
I've got to look up the soundtrack for this game.
IGN considered the game soundtrack to be the fourth best of any N64 game. Jesus, okay.
That's pretty high praise.
Definitely got to check that out.
I'm watching a long play of it right now, and even just the sound effects are kind of cool.
I'm going to look up one of the songs for it now, sure.
It's super, like, watching it, though, it's super widescreen, or, like, a wide-angle lens. It's so weird. Like, the orb is, like, so far close to, the virtual lens that when it rolls, like, it's so distorted and warped. But yeah, it's kind of bonkers to look at.
The techno-style soundtrack for Tetrisphere was composed by Neil Voss using Fast Tracker 2 on a Pentium PC.
All about them Pentiums.
I'm listening to it now, and it's, like, giving me Metroid vibes.
Voss explained that Tetrisphere features only stereophonic sound because for a game where the action is all around you, it could enhance gameplay and the immersive experience. Voss was also able to simulate surround sound, supposedly.
That's so interesting. Oh yeah, there's some homework for everyone. Jump into Tetrasphere and give it a go.
Yeah, listen to the soundtrack because it's great, apparently. But I think Luke, you're next, aren't you?
Yes.
Do you have a pick already? Or do you need suggestions?
Oh, I have an evil pick. But if somebody wants to send suggestions, then I will.
In that case, send suggestions to me because I'm the person after that, and my games have been guessed like almost every time. So I need evil picks from other people. Because I think I'm going to like pick something evil and then they end up getting it like within 10 questions. So send suggestions to me. But that about wraps up this week's VookCast. Be sure to visit the site www.vooks.net for all of your Nintendo news, reviews, and everything in between. To keep up to date, follow the site on Twitter and all of the other things. It's at vooks.net, all spelled out, except on Blue Sky, where it's just vooks.net with the dot instead of it spelled out. Or jump on over to our Discord at bit.ly/VooksDiscord. So you can find all of our social information, links for all the stories in this episode, and, you know, all of the other relevant information on whatever platform you're listening to. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you next fortnight.